Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Charlie Wooten is with us again. And I've always wondered, Charlie, how do you do that? How do you keep a great balance between your work life and your play life? And Charlie's good at playing. If you've ever watched him on Facebook, he enjoys deer hunting with a lot of his friends. We're going to ask Charlie about that. We'll have great ideas on engineering and some great ideas on relaxing. It's coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, so glad you're with us on this chilly December day. What is today? December 14th, middle of December, and we're closing in very quickly on Christmas. You've got, what, 10 shopping days until Christmas? Oh my goodness, I still got things to get. Keep it simple, though. Keep it simple like Mary and Joseph. You know, get you a little bed in a manger and just be okay with that. Maybe for some music, a little drummer boy. Speaking of little drummer boy, look who's with us from Mukwonago, Wisconsin. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
Howdy, hi-ho. Interesting story today. I was out a bunch of tower sites today. Been running since about 7 o'clock this morning. But one of those things that you don't really think about, one of the sites I was at this afternoon, I just got back from, was at the roof of a hospital. Well, I didn't tell Amy that I was going to be doing that, and she would look me up on Find My Friends to see what I was doing. And I get this frantic text message, "Why are you at the hospital?" I'm like, "Don't worry. I'm at the roof of the hospital working on an antenna." She was like, "Oh, thank goodness. You know, I thought you were in the hospital for that reason." So I'm like, that's next hilarious. Time I will let you know when I'm going to go work on the roof at the hospital so that you don't have to worry. Life we live sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Wow. And that begs a question. We'll tell you what, let's introduce our guests. But that gives me one more thing to talk about today. Goodness gracious, like we don't probably have enough already. That's a good story. Our guest today is someone who's been with us a few times before, and I'm always delighted to have him back. And that is Mr. Charles Wooten. Charlie Wooten. Hey, Charles. Welcome in. Good to see you.
Hello, Kirk. Hello. Good to be here.
That's good. It's good to see you. You are not in your usual ham shack. So where might you be today? Can you tell us?
I am in Tallahassee. I have to come over here, and I have to look over both two markets here, Panama City and Tallahassee now. And so today I landed in Tallahassee and decided it was easier to stay here to do this than to try to haul ass back to Panama City and be there. So.
Good deal. Is that a drive for you, or is that a plane flight?
2 hours. It's a 2 hours, 2 hour drive.
Okay. One way. Okay. Good deal. Good deal. So you're one of them regional engineers, aren't you, for iHeart?
I think every engineer at iHeart is a regional engineer now. I'll leave it at that.
I think so. Chris Tarr, you're a regional engineer too. You've got a whole state for a region, don't you?
I do, yeah. That's our whole group. That's all we have is Wisconsin, but all over Wisconsin.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that. I don't know that it's ever going to go back. You know, years ago, I was a contract engineer for several stations, and one of them was WKQQ in Lexington, Kentucky. And we had an engineer, a new contractor, come in. He displaced me, but that was okay. I was kind of ready to move on, and it's all good. But he was one of six engineers at, I think, WIND in Chicago that had six engineers there. And, you know, now it's like if one engineer takes care of six stations or more. Charlie, how many stations would you say that you are responsible for?
Counting translators, 13.
And see, Mr. Tarr,
I think, I have 20, 27, 28, but I was going to say that I think, you know, that we're headed in the direction that I was talking about a couple of years ago where, you know, there's gonna be guys like Charlie and me and even you, that kind of handle the big stuff. And then I've got, you know, contract engineers in different locations that kind of handle the day to day, you know, keeping the sites clean, changing filters, you know, the triage with the transmitter. And then, you know, when the bigger stuff comes in, that's where I show up, you know, repairing antennas, checking. I've got all the test gear, you know, to check everything out. And I think we're going to see that with a lot of groups and a lot of stations now as people retire, that, you know, you're going to see a, you know, the really kind of the older guys now taking on, maybe not even at one station or at one group rather, but just in a geographical area, kind of being the, you know, the guy in the region to call and, you know, walk other people through doing what they're doing. So, you know, it's inevitable. You know, we all know that there's such a shortage of new people coming in.
I think the division of labor is interesting, and there's not going to be any set rules for it. And that's one of the topics I'd like to talk about. Hey, let's real quick hit up our friends at Nautel. Nautel is a sponsor of This Week in Radio Tech. Normally, they do those Transmission Talk Tuesday shows where you're invited to participate. And those are on a little hiatus until, I guess, till after the first of the year. I'm trying to get hold of Jeff Welton to tell me when the next one is going to be. Hopefully, when we're all cozy and snug in our beds and you know, locked down right after Christmas, because it's cold outside, they'll get back to doing those again. In the meantime, let me talk to you for a minute about the Nautel GV series of FM transmitters, and in fact, their latest, the GV2, whoops, that's the Bionics one, the GV series is a terrific line of transmitters. And in fact, now they have this GV2 series. And Suncast, if I could get you to, sorry, I didn't provide you with the link to it, navigate to the GV2. There's a little link on the main GV page. And the GV2 page supports HD radio with Xperi Gen 4 importer, exporter, and engine implementations for HD radio encoding, station logo and artist experience, and all that in the transmitter. Also, Omnia for Nautel covers all your FM and HD radio audio processing. Plus, it provides a live wire AOIP input for your audio streams. No additional hardware is required. They have a new IQ interface card. They have the new HTML AUI. That's that advanced user interface. And now it doesn't require, you know, a Java on your computer to do that. It's just HTML. They have an embedded compute engine with 10 times more processing power. Basically, they gave it a lot more power to do more things, like Omni audio processing. It has optimized power supplies, solid state storage, and even a virtualization engine built in. Some optional features are available too, like software-based air chain support, that Omnia for Nautel for FM and HD, blend lock for FM and HD synchronization, and an air chain selector are all options that you can get on the GV2 transmitter from Nautel. You can check it out on their website. It's nautel.com/GV2. Nautel.com/GV2 and check it out. I think you're going to like it. Thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And we'll apprise you when the next Transmission Talk Tuesday is going to be up so you can be one of the first to sign up. It's Kirk Harnack here in Nashville, Tennessee. Chris Tarr is in Mukwonago, and Charlie Wooten is our guest, and he is in Tallahassee, Florida at the iHeart facility there. Charlie, you know, I follow you on Facebook. Usually Facebook shows me what you're doing. Sometimes I got to go look for you. I'm kind of interested in, like, what's been some of your highlights over the last year, because you are a guy who posts some of your more interesting things. You know, if there's an interesting failure or a repair or some extravagant work that's being done, tower crew, that kind of thing, you tend to post those things. And as an engineer, I really appreciate that. So maybe you can give us a couple highlights that you'd like, maybe teachable moment highlights too, that we can learn from.
Well, you know, I enjoy letting people know that I'm actually working for a living. Some people wonder about that. So I always incorporate what I'm up to, my projects, in my Facebook post. This year has been interesting because of Tallahassee. I've had to spend an average of 2 days a week here. And so there have been some days when it's been 4 days and some days when it's only been maybe, or for some weeks when it's only been one. But for the averaging out, it's probably about 2 days a week. And we had some significant events here in Tallahassee this year. Really and truly, Tallahassee has been where the action for me has been this year. We had a pretty good lightning strike, and then we had a problem with our transfer switch, and we had a power failure. And when the transfer switch went to transfer to the generator, of course, the UPS, we have a master UPS, a big 18 kVA UPS that holds up all the rack equipment, keeps us on the air, you know, where nothing has to reboot while the generator is cranking up. Well, the generator cranked up like it was supposed to, and the transfer switch tried to transfer, but it would not transfer. And we looked and we looked and we tried to figure it, and we had the door open when we would do it, and everything was working perfectly. We would transfer to the generator, kablink, it would go. We closed the door, it wouldn't. Well, we had this little project at iHeart called GenPulse. It's a monitoring system that keeps an eye on the battery condition of a generator and what state it's in, and things to do with the generator so that we can look at it from a, you know, remotely. And the electrician, when they install the GenPulse on this one particular transfer switch, put one of the circuit boards mounted on the front door, and it was just barely, I mean, probably maybe sticking out too far, a 16th of an inch. Well, I don't know how many of you guys guys and girls are familiar with Onan transfer switches. There's a big T handle that moves up and down inside the transfer switch. Well, that circuit pack was laying up just enough to prohibit that handle from moving. And it was the first time we'd been on the generator, you know, in years, literally, where we had to go to. We've had power failures, but they usually they have been short enough that the UPS took care of the problem. And since there was no one here to actually notice that we didn't go on generator, and we had these short power failures, we never knew that this was happening until it happened during a little hurricane we had here that went through just east of here. And so we got that figured out. But that was a real, you know, it was a real problem to find until we realized that every time we closed the door, it wouldn't work. But every time the door was open, it would work. And that drove me up the wall for
and
the electrician. But I mean, here's a little, you know, hard drive, little portable USB hard drive. The circuit pack was a little bit bigger than this and maybe a little thicker, but it was just mounted in just the right spot that it was keeping that T handle from being able to drop down and go into the backup, into the generator position. And that was a good war story that took up a lot of my time.
And I think you told me, was that installed by a technician who does that for a living?
Well, it was installed by an electrician.
Electrician. Okay.
Yeah, we had electricians come in and install those because they literally have to go on to the three phase and add wiring to monitor commercial power and to monitor the generator output. So those things go to this thing called GenPulse. And so you have to have an electrician do all of that. And at any rate, that was the only site that this problem occurred. And we had, let's see, there's four here in Tallahassee. There are four in Panama City. This was the only site, the studio in Tallahassee was the only site where we had this problem, and it just drove us up the wall.
I'm glad you got it fixed, but you know what? It reminds me, you have the door shut and you're not sure if it's going to work or not. I think that's called Schrodinger's transfer switch.
That's it. That's it.
It could be in either state. You don't know until you open the door.
That's right. Open the door and you'll find there's a prize inside. Just open the door.
I'm sorry, Charlie. I cut you off. Go ahead and continue.
No, I was just going to say, Tallahassee's been an interesting situation because I had to acclimate myself to the wiring here and everything, because it was done differently from the way I did it in Panama City, and it's taken a while. And I have to say that Randy Moore, who was the engineer here, who retired now, he's been able to come and help me a couple of times to figure out where things were, because I've had some questions about it, but we were able to trace everything down. And then the really interesting, that's very recent, we just put a translator on with Fox Sports on it, and it's a translator off of our AM station, and we put it on the air. It had music on it before, but we moved that, and so now we had talk programming on there. Well, the minute we put the talk programming on there, we could hear NOAA weather radio about 50 dB down. I mean, it was there, and you wouldn't hear it with music playing all the time, but it was there. And we looked and looked and looked. I had Randy come in, and we moved wires, and we did this and we did that. It ended up being crosstalk in a GEPCO multi-conductor cable. Over the year, there's this blue goo sticking, it's oozing out of the end of these blue 32 and 16 pair cables. But yeah. I don't know if it's having, it's conductive or whatever, but that was another little problem we had, that was that we had this crosstalk. And of course, before, we didn't know it was there because we had music going all the time. And it was 50 dB down, and so you couldn't hear it. Well, now that we had sports talk on there, and there might be a little pregnant pause, if you were listening, you could hear it. So we finally figured that out. We figured that out week before last, and finally got that problem straightened out. Hey, a lot of the stuff here in Tallahassee's been IT. Go ahead.
I'm curious about something. I've had crosstalk in lengthy multi-conductor cables, even if they were individually shielded pairs. And maybe the GEPCO is also individually shielded pairs. Yeah, is that right?
Individually shielded pair. Yes, that's correct.
I've had that happen, of course, if one of the pairs was carrying audio and it was unbalanced. Whereas all been balanced, then it's been okay. Yeah.
Well, the very first thing we did, this was an unbalanced audio output coming from a Sage EAS receiver. And first thing I did was put a 600 ohm to 600 ohm transformer on it to make it balanced audio. Because I had the exact same thought that you had, Kirk, that it was because of being unbalanced. But we did that and checked it on the other end, and it was still there. So,
Yeah.
It was just good old crosstalk, some high resistance, a little bit of high resistance. I really wonder about this blue goo that's coming out of these GEPCO cables. It must be conductive or something, and maybe it's eating into the insulation. A lot of this wiring has been in here since 1997 and 1998. So, it may have something to do with that.
Wow. That seems like yesterday, but it wasn't yesterday. It was 25 years ago. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Chris Tarr, any thoughts? You have any similar experiences with crosstalk on long cable runs?
Absolutely. In fact, I was just up, was it this last week? I was up in our stations in Toma to put in live wire to get around that, because we were having issues with crosstalk between our AM and one of our FMs. And we had it on the docket for quite a while to get that done, because it was also that GEPCO, multi-pair GEPCO. And it just like any other building that's been there forever as a radio station, you know, to try to sit there and trace that out just didn't make a lot of sense, especially since like a lot of stations, we don't really have much in the way of live staff in that building. And, you know, we've got the data center and everything else. So we ended up just bypassing all of that and putting in LiveWire, and that pretty well took care of the problem. But, you know, having dealt with several stations over the years in analog with that multi-pair stuff, that can be some of the hardest stuff to track down when you're hearing crosstalk like that. Especially since, you know, in some of the more complex stations or facilities, that audio can run over several different multi-pairs. So, you know, to try to track down which, you know, which pair. Another quick story that kind of goes along with that is in Milwaukee, before we switched over to LiveWire there, we were swapping out an audio processor, like an Ariane or something. And I had the VU meters on in my office on the radio. And I said to my assistant, Tony, I said, okay, go ahead and unplug the left channel. And I'm sitting there and the meters are still moving. And I said, Tony, unplug the left channel. He said, it is unplugged. And he dangled the XLR in front of me. Oh. And it hit the station for at least a year, because I had been there a year by the time we did this, was in mono, because somewhere along the way, the pairs got messed up. So it was funny because I fixed it right away, and the PD came in and said, what did you do to the processing? It sounds so much better. I was like, oh, here you go. I don't know. But yeah, that's the danger with that stuff, and why I'm glad that that's kind of going away.
Hey, we got to take a quick break. We're here with Chris Tarr and Charlie Wooten on This Week in Radio Tech. It's always great to talk to Charlie. And then Chris and Charlie, when they talk, we talk about, you know, things, problems we've had and how we fixed them in the past year or so. And stay tuned, because during the show, I want to talk to Charlie about how he balances play and work, because Charlie seems to be really good at that. He has a great time playing when he's not working. Although he's been accused of doing both at the same time. You know, at Telos Alliance, we were just having a conversation with some customers and some of our own internal people about implementing or deploying virtualized systems. And now there's more than one way to do it. I mean, heck, 2 years ago, you pretty much had to provide your own server, and Telos Alliance would help you install virtualized, containerized broadcast infrastructure products. That's a mouthful, on your own server. But now there are a number of choices. And one of those choices, in fact, I think the easiest one, is Virtual Rack from Broadcast Bionics. What's Virtual Rack? Well, Dan McQuillan at Broadcast Bionics recognized that installing Docker containers, especially ones that needed to be high performance for real-time audio and have typically more than one network connection. They would have one network for the audio over IP and another network for monitoring and control. So you have two virtual networks inside the infrastructure, inside the server. And that's a little tricky to implement as well. So Broadcast Bionics came up with this product called Virtual Rack. And Virtual Rack, it's like an app store for the virtualized broadcast world. You can just, when you get your Virtual Rack, which you get the server, you're buying the server, and then you are licensing the software that Broadcast Bionics takes care of. And basically, it's a vending machine for virtualized broadcast products like phone systems and audio consoles and audio processing and things that are not from Telos Alliance, things also from Sound4 or from 2WCOM like codecs. You can spin these up just by clicking on them, and each one takes a certain amount of, you know, CPU space, or they call it application space, and you can, you know, you're not going to overfill your virtual rack. It won't let you. So you pick out the products that you want, you spin them up, and then they work, at least in demo mode. If you want to fully use them, of course, you will license those products, whether it's an audio console, a phone system, audio processing, and so forth. You'll license those with their respective manufacturers, like Telos Alliance or 2WCOM or Sound4. There are options available for failover so you can buy two of these and they'll watch each other. And if it needs to fail over to the other one, it can do that. So, and plus you've got support from Broadcast Bionics, and these guys are so good at this. They are so clever. My colleagues at Telos Alliance were a little skeptical at first. Gee, can Dan McQuillan and Broadcast Bionics do this and make it really work well? Well, we're impressed. We really are. The virtual rack lets you rapidly deploy containerized broadcast products. That's the simplest way to say it, and that's what they say on their website. There's two different sizes you can get, and you can also, you know, this another way to say it is deploy containerized products without being a Linux expert, and that's a great hill you don't have to climb. This is pretty easy stuff. So, you want to check it out. There's a list of dealers that you can buy these through. Broadcast Bionics is your point of contact for support, of course, and for getting the thing going. Virtual Rack, go to Bionics, I should say, with an S, bionics.co.uk, and you can read all about it. And toward the bottom of the page, there's a couple of videos with Dan McQuillan explaining how the Virtual Rack works. And if you want to go back a few months, you'll see we did a Torch show with Dan McQuillan about the Virtual Rack, and he spends a lot of time talking about how it works and what the options are, and even gives us some demonstrations. So check that out. Broadcast Bionics, thank you very much for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech, and thanks for, you know, helping us deploy technology that's a little bit complicated but really cool to use once you get it done. Appreciate your help and appreciate your sponsorship from Broadcast Bionics. All right, it's Kirk Harnack, Chris Tarr, and Charlie Wooten is here. And we were just talking about some of the challenges that Charlie's had over the past year. Tallahassee's been kind of a new challenge just because things are different. You didn't wire the place, so you got to go in and adjust your mind. Charlie, I'm sure you go in and you think, well, you know, that's not how I would have done it. But okay, we'll deal with it. Anytime you go into a new place.
It's not that it's done wrong. It's just done differently. Yeah. I ran into that, but, it's just, you know, that, there's several ways to skin a cat, as they say. And I've run into that a couple of times, and I'm sure if someone was to come into my plant, they would say the same thing, that, you know, hey, why'd you do it this way?
Earlier, we started to talk about division of responsibilities with having different engineers, and Chris kind of got us started on that conversation. I'll say from on my own experience with the station groups that I'm part owner of, I used to take care of almost everything except heavy-duty tower work. Although now we've developed a good relationship with another engineer, Russell Lafferty from Eastern Kentucky. And Russell, and he's got a good friend who's a tower climber, Russell tends now to handle our transmitter sites, and I tend to handle our studio sites. And, you know, part of this, I got a full-time job with Telos Alliance. I can't spend 3 or 4 days installing a new transmitter like Russell can, because he does this full-time. So that's kind of our division of responsibility. Russell's been out to our stations in Hawaii, and he's been out to our stations in American Samoa. And it used to be that a broadcast engineer was a jack of all trades. You kind of understood everything, and the only thing maybe you didn't do was the tower work. You had left that to the professional tower company. So, Charlie, within your organization, how are you seeing division of responsibility? How are you seeing that divided up? Where are the lines between them?
Well, I do have I do call on Randy Moore, who, like I said, has retired, and he's put out a couple of fires to save me from having to come over, you know, in an emergency, so to speak. We have relationships with a couple of area contract engineers. Chris Hall lives right up the road up in Thomasville, Georgia, and he's been available sometimes if Randy isn't. And so if it's something that needs immediate, like can't wait 2 hours, I can call Randy or I can call Chris to help. And then, you know, for things that happen within the company, you know, where they're planned, you know, a planned type of a construction project, you know, we have resources in the iHeart to come and assist with those things. So, you know, there's going to be a point in time where in Panama City where we're going to be moving into a new building, and we're selling our existing building. And so there'll be a team of people that will that will come in to assist us with that as well. And I'm sure I'll, but because of the nature of the way I am, I want to be right in there in the middle of it. But you know, they will have a plan to construct the new studios that we will have there when that time comes in the next year or so.
You know, Charlie, we've heard a few years ago, the FCC started using this term Tiger Team, and I'm not quite sure, you know, with regard to their closing some field offices. And I heard iHeart use that team with regard to solving certain engineering problems. And at first I heard speculation that, you know, well, is this really going to work out well? But then I've also heard some highly complimentary things about this concept, especially when it comes to building new facilities or doing a makeover. Can you talk a bit more about how, when you have a group of engineers that is available to come in together and meet somewhere and get something big done more quickly? Have you experienced that?
I haven't had any direct experience with it, but iHeart does have what they call a Tiger Team. And it's not only just RF engineers or studio engineers, it also includes IT people as well. So because IT is a, you know, more and more important part of the transmitter side and the studio. And so they have people who come in to assist both in the construction of new facilities, and also if you have a major catastrophe or something and you need some immediate assistance to get back online, they have the Tiger Team also responds to that.
And I'm going to go ahead.
I'm in a region, the region I'm in, I'm in the same region with the engineers in Mobile, Alabama, and in Mississippi, and New Orleans and Baton Rouge. And so we have an engineering lead for our region. That's Chris Wiggins, who lives in Mobile, Pensacola area. And then we all report to Dan Mettler. And we can call upon each other. And we have a weekly conference call on Wednesday afternoons, and we discuss things that we're working on, and somebody will have a problem and they'll throw it out there, and we'll talk about what the possible fix is, or somebody needs a part or whatever. And so, you know, I've got in Panama City, I'm lucky enough to have at one of my transmitter sites, which used to be, also has a television station. I have a pretty large transmitter building, and I've been able to warehouse several transmitters in there for parts. And so I've got probably 6 or 8 20 and 30 and 35 kW transmitters sitting in that building that are not being used, that are there for parts. And I've had to ship parts out to people all around the country in iHeart. You know, because I happen to have a place to be able to store those and have access to them.
I look and I hear stories from iHeart engineering teams, and you know, a lot of times we remember the past with rose-colored glasses, and it just seems like the overall quality of engineering at stations is really pretty good. You guys have a lot of standardized systems. Obviously, you have a lot of help. You know, it used to be that one engineer kind of had to know everything or was expected to know everything. And now you've got a network of people that you can depend on for, well, as you just mentioned, parts, but also ideas. Hey, I'm having trouble monitoring this station's dead air, or I need an automatic failover that's going to move several things all at once. Is this a custom thing I have to build up, or does somebody make this, or anybody got any ideas? Is that the thing that you may talk about in your conference calls?
Yeah, not only that, you mentioned monitoring for dead air. We don't have to monitor, our individual engineers don't have to worry about monitoring for dead air or having hardware to monitor for dead air. Now we have these new rack mount ASI, they're made by ASI tuners, which are hooked to a computer system over the network, and each station is monitored 24/7, and there is a there is a team of people who monitor those things 24/7. And if you do have dead air, you get an email, and you get, and if it's not resolved quickly, you get a phone call. So that's been a positive thing for us is that we have those ASI tuners are really cool. They'll do HD, they'll do AM, FM, obviously. And, I've got like, I think there's eight in one single rack unit, piece. And, you hook an antenna to it and it works and it works really well. And I really was really, you know, people don't care about AM anymore, but I still do. Many don't. But I was impressed with the AM receiver that built into that unit. It's a really sensitive, and it's actually got some bandwidth on it, so you can actually hear the radio station in decent fidelity. And it's very sensitive. I'm picking up my AM station without any problem whatsoever using the antenna that's connected to the FM antenna port, which I'm a good, you know, 2-3 airline miles from the tower. So I'm really surprised how, I mean, it's a good quiet signal. It's not noisy or anything like that. It's really, really good. I really like these ASI receivers. Now they have receivers.
Oh, it's the same company that made the audio cards. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. I'll look those up and try to put them in the show notes. If you have a link or a model number, Charlie, maybe you could shoot that to me, text or email. That'd be great, and I'll put them in the show notes.
That for you. Look here on my desktop. I've got a link to it on my receiver on my desktop here. I'll get that to
Chris.
You.
Chris, wrap up this segment. How are you doing multiple station monitoring? You know, we used to rely on our employees in Mississippi, and that hadn't worked out too well. it's hard. Well, it's hard to listen to 15 stations.
We've got several ways to do it. First of all, you know, my setup is obviously a little bit different than like an iHeart because we're a small company, but I too have really good people in the different markets that can give me a hand. You know, I've got one of the best transmitter guys in the business with John Zeckerly. I have a gentleman named Daryl who does work for us. He's 75 years old or something, and he just loves going to check on sites, and he just go around and let me know, you know, what's going on. I've got another guy in La Crosse who, you know, can check on transmitters for me. So I'm very fortunate. I do miss when I was with Odyssey, you know, those conference calls and the brain trust there where I could send out an email and go, hey, you know, anybody having an issue like this, or, you know, like a Tiger team, I would go out to different markets and work on Axia and wide orbit and things. So it's a little bit different for me, but for monitoring now, I've got both tuners, remote tuners in each market. Plus, I have, silent sensors, the Broadcast Tools web enabled, silent sensors. They monitor up to eight signals, and it's SNMP controlled. So it's tied into my Burke. So if anybody goes silent, I'll get an email first and then a phone call if it doesn't get resolved right away. And the other issue we had is with so many stations, sometimes we had an issue, you know, with me in the middle of the night one night where I got the call and I looked at the wrong station and went, oh, it's on the air. I'm going to not worry about it. Well, that station was off for a while because I reset the alarm and heard the wrong station and went, oh, okay, it's fixed. So my systems now will also pull every 10 minutes or so. And if it's still off, it sends an update to mention that it's still off. And we have, instead of, you know, a NOC that monitors this stuff, we're just kind of all hands on deck. So even the, you know, even my coworker who owns the stations will get a call after a while, just as a backup. You know, we all kind of take that responsibility together to make sure that everything is on the air. So it's nice. I never feel like there's any pressure, you know, on me to kind of take care of it all. We're very much a team here. So, you know, while I you know, make a lot of decisions with, you know, what to buy and what to do and, you know, come up with gadgets, you know, my latest streaming gadget for stream monitors. You know, I don't really feel that pressure that, you know, if I miss a phone call because the station's off, we're in trouble, because there's a bunch of other people who will catch it and jump on and take care of it, and I won't have to do anything. So that's really nice. But we do now have monitors for, I just added stream monitors too. So if a stream goes down or goes silent, which has happened before, I get notified as with that as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, a lot of I like the tools that are available to help us. I had a real quick follow-up question for Charlie before we take our next break. Charlie, you spoke of the how you like the tuners in this ASI multi-tuner thing. Would they ever be fooled by, let's say that an FM amplifier died, but the exciter was still on? Is that a potential problem in monitoring off the air if you're too close or at the transmitter site?
Well, it would be, but we're also monitoring power output on our Burk, which is is reporting in to the same computer system, which is called Big Panda, whatever okay. that is. Big Panda knows all and sees all, and Big Panda is where all this information goes into. And if we lose audio, we get an alarm. If our power drops below 90%, we get an alarm. So either way, we would get it. And by the way, it's an ASI 2816-2816.
Oh, okay. Cool. I will look that up in Friday's show notes. That's pretty cool. All right. Hey, it's This Week in Radio Tech. Chris Tarr is along, of course, and Charlie Wooten is with us. We've got a few more things to talk about, including I'm wanting to hear about, you know, trail cams and deers and how Charlie, you know, actively takes time away from broadcasting, or at least tries to. So that's coming up. I want to understand that a bit better, and maybe we'll have another story or two. Hey, our show is brought to you in part by Henry Engineering. Hank Landsberg, one of my favorite people, designs things that broadcast engineers need. And I've spoken very highly of this and will speak highly of it again. And that's the Henry Engineering Back UPS. So many times we have to implement equipment in our broadcast facility, equipment that has only one power supply in it. So I'm thinking of a lot of my playout machines. I'm thinking of, as much as I love the Omni 11, it's only got one power supply on it, one power supply connector. So there's not a chance for, you know, two supplies. I do have plenty of servers, of course, that have two supplies, but even things like my Sage EAS box, those have, you know, one power input going to them. And so if I've got a UPS, but you know what? I've been burned a number of times by UPSs dying. And maybe it's been my own fault for not proper maintenance on the batteries. And sometimes it ain't been my fault. It's just been the darn UPS. So the Back UPS lets you connect your equipment, maybe things that have one power supply, to two different sources of power. One of those can be a UPS. That's a typical application. The other one could be shore power, or maybe another UPS. Maybe you've got a UPS in each rack. I've got a transmitter site with two racks, two good-sized UPSs. It turns out that I supply Back UPS from shore power, you know, from commercial non-UPS power, and the other side is from our UPS power. So if the UPS dies, well, we're on the shore power. Now, you can set which is the main input, and I've got my main input as being coming from the UPS. So my computers and other things that have just one power supply, they're powered by the UPS through the Back UPS from Henry Engineering. But if that UPS dies, if that UPS has a fault, or if I need to take it offline to change something, work on its configuration, to change the batteries, obviously, or maybe I poorly installed a cable and I need to unplug something to rerun the cable. I've done that a few times. Then the Back UPS instantly switches over to the backup power, which in my case is, you know, directly from the power panel. And there you go. All my stuff stays on the air. And this is just the smartest thing. I love the back UPS. I didn't have any, and my business partner, Larry Fuss, thought it'd be a good idea. I've been advertising them and he heard the ads. So let's get one. And we did. And I just love this thing. Now I need to get them for my other transmitter sites and studio sites where it's inconvenient to, or where equipment only has one power supply. So check this out. You can buy it from all your favorite broadcast dealers, the Henry Engineering Back UPS, or maybe you pronounce it back ups. I don't know. Anyway, it's worth having. They're pretty cool. They're available from Broadcaster's General Store. And that's where, you know, if I were in the market for one again, that's where I would check in. BGS.cc is the website. If you're watching our show, you see the website right now. You can call them at 352-622-7700. And I got to tell you, at more than any other modern company, these guys are set up at BGS to take your phone calls. They answer the phone almost always right away, sometimes on the first ring. And they have all their computer systems in front of them, all their ordering systems, and their package tracking systems. It's all available to them very quickly, very easily. And that means you get great customer service from Broadcaster's General Store. Good folks. Love them. And like the Henry Engineering, too. Check it out. All right. We're here with Chris Tarr and Charlie Wooten. Charlie, we've got, maybe another 15 minutes left in the show altogether. I'd love to hear what you have to say about your extracurricular activities. You post a lot about the Hunt Club, the deer camp, and for those of us who are not initiated, I've never been to a deer camp. I'd love to hear about it. So tell me about this pastime of yours.
All right. Well, I'm president of our hunting lease. We have a hunting lease, which we've had since it was originally leased in 1986. I've been the president since 1998. And it's called the Bear Creek Hunting Club. It's located in Calhoun County, Florida. If you look on Facebook, it's Bear Creek Hunting Club, Calhoun County, Florida. And we have a great time there. I have two different vices, I guess you'd say. One is deer hunting or hobbies. One is deer hunting and the other is ham radio. So I have to, they're not very compatible with one another. So I'm either, if I'm going to end in the mood for ham radio, I have to be at the house. People keep saying, well, why don't you build a station at the hunting lease? It's not compatible, but we have a great time. We have a cook shed, a very nice cook shed with recliners. We got a whole wall of recliners. Our building is about 32 by 16. One end of it is a full kitchen with two stoves, refrigerator, the whole nine yards. We run on generator. We have a well. There's no commercial power where we are. We're in the middle of nowhere in the woods, and we just have a hell of a good time there, and we eat very well. We cook our steaks outdoors on a metal grate over oak wood, and some of the best steaks you've ever eaten. And we have a good time hunting, whether we shoot anything or not, we still have a great time. And right now, deer season is in full swing. As I was telling Chris before we went on the air here with the webcast, in Florida, in our area of Florida, northwest in the panhandle part of Florida, the deer season is very strange compared to, say, where he is in Wisconsin. The deer season starts here. We get 4 days at Thanksgiving, and then it shuts down, and then it opens back up the second Saturday in December, and then it runs all the way until the third weekend of February. And it's a fairly long hunting season compared to many areas around the country. And our rut here is very late. It usually happens anywhere from the 10th to the 15th. Starts around the 10th to the 15th of January, and then peaks a few weeks out or a week or so after that. But anyhow, it's a lot of fun. We hunt a little bit different down here. We don't sit in a tree stand or in a blind or anything like that, or we don't walk around. Although there are people in our hunting club who do that. A majority of the people on our hunting club, we use hounds, which are legal in many states in the Southeast United States. We use hounds to pursue the game, and it's a lot of fun. I enjoy the pursuit more than the taking of the animal. And a lot of times we don't take the animal because the animal is smart and knows how to deal with dogs. And so people think it's like shooting fish in a barrel, and it is not. You have a lot better chance of stalk hunting or sitting in a tree stand or sitting in a blind to get a deer than you do dog hunting. But it's a lot of fun to pursue the deer with hounds. And that's what I do. As far as hunting is concerned, I have a small camp house. It's basically a storage building, a site-built storage building that has been completely walled in with insulation and everything. It has a full-size bathroom, not an RV-size bathroom, but a full-size shower. And a toilet and a full-size toilet and a vanity with a sink. I have a on-demand hot water heater that runs on gas and on propane. And several of the other guys there have the similar situations. And we just have a great time. It's great. And we'll, you know, at the end of the day when the hunt's over and the weapons are put away, we may consume a few adult beverages in the evening, you know, before we go to bed. And it's just a lot of fun. Just a lot of fun. We've got a very tight knit group of guys that hunt with us, and the names and the faces don't really change from year to year. We rarely take in new members. We've got a core number of people that hunt on our lease. Like I said, it's 13,000 acres. It's a lot of land, and we only have 34 members. And so, but that's plenty of land for that many people. And we have a great time. And of course, like I said, my other hobby is ham radio, which I enjoy immensely as well, and have since I was 12 years old.
Wow. Wow. Of course, we've talked about ham radio before on the show, but we really haven't talked much about the hunt club. Chris, I'm not a hunter myself. I enjoy other people's pastimes and activities through hearing about them from them. I'd love to go along sometime. Chris, are you involved, or do you have friends involved with hunting up where you are, which is a big thing in Wisconsin?
It is. Well, that's exactly it. Yes and yes. Hunting is a way of life up here. I mean, it's just, you know, growing up here, I never give a second thought to the hunt because that's just, it's what we do. So, you know, I actually have a couple of transmitter sites where we have blinds, we have tree stands, and, you know, the hunting is really good. In fact, the other day on Facebook, I posted a trail cam of a couple of male deer and a doe, and you know, just sitting there. And I will literally, I have two of my sites. I have trail cams, and every day, literally every day, I get pictures of deer. And in fact, I have them in my backyard. They're just all over the place. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we can't use hounds up here, but it's, you know, the same kind of thing where it's as much a social event as it is anything else.
I got a couple questions for Charlie. And by the way, I'm not a hunter. My next door neighbor is, and he took a deer right here on my property bow hunting a year ago. In fact, it happened to be on my wedding day when I married Carmen, and I invited him and his wife to the house to share a bottle of champagne and cut the cake with us. He said, I can't. I'm covered in blood right now. He was cleaning the deer on the back of his pickup truck right next door. And he had put up a blind. I think he put it underneath the utility right away. There's power lines overhead. And that was a convenient place to put the blind. Charlie, if you could tell me for a second about cleaning the animals. When you take the animal, you get them, I guess you get them back to the camp. Do you clean the animal there?
Yeah, we have a place on a creek where we take them, where we have water, and we have a what we call a skin and pole set up where our landowners that we lease the land from require us to weigh the deer and measure the horns on the deer if it's a buck. And we have to report that, and we have to tag the deer, of course, obviously. And so we have a place where we can hoist up the deer and clean the deer. And believe it or not, for where what comes out of the deer goes onto the ground, and by the next day it's gone because the coyotes come at night and take care of it and clean it up, and you wouldn't even know there was a deer gutted out there because the coyotes have taken every morsel, everything.
Wow. Wow.
Chris mentioned something about cameras. We probably have 35 or 40 cameras on our property. And of course I have one camera, and I have an app on my phone, and the camera's connected to a cell phone. And or not to a cell phone, but has a cell phone radio built into it, and I get pictures every time a deer walks past a camera. We get a picture of it, and we'll be hunting, and we'll get up early in the morning, and we're getting ready, and people will be looking at the pictures that might have come in over their cell phones overnight, and we'll decide, well, looks like there was this 8-point over here at this place or whatever, and so we'll go over and we'll try to trail that, the dogs will try to trail up that 8-point or whatever. But technology is really it's really good, and something talking about technology and deer hunting and hounds, we actually have we have collars, and they're not just collars that put out a signal that we can directional find, that they actually have a GPS receiver built into the collar, so the dog sends out its exact location. So, and we have a handheld device. It's made by Garmin. Actually made by Garmin. And we have a handheld device which we can look at, and it tells us exactly where a dog is and what direction he's moving, because it updates every 5 to 10 seconds. Chris, you probably are familiar a little bit with the ham radio part, APRS, where it sends out a location by packet radio. It's very similar to APRS on packet radio, the system that Garmin uses. In fact, I'm sure that the brainstorm that somebody at Garmin had about this was probably based on APRS. But we literally used to have a problem keeping up with our dogs and making sure that they didn't go off the property. And and now we know exactly where they are. Each dog has its own digital address, and we have to enter that digital. It's a 5-digit number, and we enter that, and we can put like 10 or 12 of them into our device and look at them, and it tells us exactly where all of those dogs are. So they're pretty expensive. The collars are about $300 a piece. The handheld unit's about $800 or $900 a piece. So it's not a cheap thing, but it's a very valuable thing.
Wow. Wow. Hey, a quick question before we take our last break. And that is, I had somebody ask me recently about how could they catch somebody stealing Christmas ornaments from a public place at night? And I said, I think you need a trail cam. That trail cam would be really good. And I noticed there's such a huge variety of trail cams available, ones that just store the images, others that Wi-Fi, others that are cellular, like you mentioned yours. Can you recommend a brand or a model that and maybe engineers who have a transmitter site they want to watch, or an entrance to watch? What do you think?
I use what's called a spy point. There are other ones. After the break here, I'll get you the name of a couple more, because I have some of my other hunting buddies that share pictures with me that use other devices. But spy point is one, and I'll get you the name of a couple more too.
Good deal. I like those pictures that you see on Facebook sometimes where they show, a raccoon and a couple of deer having a really lit party, in the middle of the night. And we got deer here. Yeah, obviously on my property, we've seen as many as 6 or 7 deer because I live next to a state park. Well, anyway, hey, we're going to bring up Chris Tarr next to talk about angry audio. You're listening or watching to This Week in Radio Tech with Chris Tarr, Kirk Harnack, and Charlie Wooten. Chris, it is time for us to hear from you about angry audio. What you got for us?
Well, you know, I was the other day working on a studio, a production studio, and there was this whine that they couldn't figure out where this whine was coming from, this kind of buzzing noise, and it was coming up on their console. Well, it was noise coming out from their sound card because the CPU frequency was high enough that it was interfering with the or it was powerful enough CPU that you were hearing the clock on the CPU over the audio. Why? Because there's no transformer there. They just plug right into the sound card. Angry Audio, of course, has the solution. They have USB gizmos that work as audio transformers, and they've got a new one now. They have an analog one that works very, very well. But if you're into digital, they've got a brand new digital one that does. They've got two versions. They've got the 44 kilohertz version, 44 and 48, and then they also have a 192 kilohertz version. So there are two different versions. Obviously, the 192 is a little more expensive. That one will actually, with digital, will pass a whole lot of stuff versus the 4448 version. But either one is a great way. You know, maybe you have a digital console that you want to interface with, and you've got this analog, you had an analog sound card in your computer. Let the USB take care of that. Plug it into USB, plug the other one into your digital console. And in fact, they mentioned that. Stop the whining. It's a very common thing. And actually, you know, when I first heard it, I didn't know what it was, years ago when I ran into this. And it's, you know, it turns out that it's a very common thing, even when you're using like a Matchbox or something like that, because you're still taking that audio out of the sound card. And sometimes that's where the audio gets in there. That's how the whining gets in, is through the sound card. USB, that typically doesn't happen because it's all digital. So you plug in your USB cable and you've got all the breakouts for Studio Hub. So very easy to interface. You'll literally have this thing hooked up in about 3 minutes. You plug it into your computer, you plug the audio in and out of it, and you are done. Check them out on angryaudio.com. Contact your favorite vendor. And remember, you know, when these problems come up, don't get frustrated, get angry. AngryAudio.com.
I totally agree. And I have, you know, one of those USB gizmos here at my office. And one day I had an older MacBook Air, and I wanted to hear some good audio out of it. And I had these powered Tannoy speakers. And so I thought, well, I'll just use the USB gizmo to convert from USB audio into audio for the Tannoys. Oh my goodness, these things sounded great being fed by that USB interface. No,
well, you know, I mean, Catfish is very much into the audio quality. So as he designs these things, he uses, you know, excellent transformers, you know, all the, you know, everything is shielded and built like a tank.
Absolutely. You're right. He does cool things with grounding too. That I don't understand. All right. Our show is brought to you also, besides Angry Audio, by Max Connect. And Max Connect's, Max Connect's Broadcast U.192. This is an MPX USB sound card. So if you are a fan of running, your FM audio processing as software in a computer, well, you need a way to get that audio into the world of, maybe composite. To feed your composite STL or your composite FM exciter. And there are a few kind of workarounds that people have been doing for years, trying to get a regular or get a USB sound card that would do 192 kilohertz sampling to do this. But there's always drawbacks. There's DC offset, and there's sometimes capacitors that are in the line. There's reasons why this is less than ideal. Well, here comes the ideal, the Max Connect Broadcast U192 MPX USB sound card. It has the analog MPX composite output on B and C connections, got two of them, support for digital MPX composite baseband over AES.
That's a ESEBU. Front panel switch selects analog or digital input. Another panel switch chooses stereo analog or MPX output. It's got front panel signal LEDs. You can see at a glance which outputs are active. Built-in AC to DC power supply. There's no wall wart. This thing is powered by a real by golly power cord and an internal power supply. It is designed for 24/7 operation, period. It's designed to be every bit as reliable, probably more so, than the PC that you're running your FM processing software on. So if you're a fan of Stereo Tool, Omnia SST, maybe Breakaway One, any of these products that can use USB output to output the composite signal as a 192 kilohertz sampled signal, hey, this is the way to get it done from Max Connect. It's actually designed by Angry Audio and sold and marketed by Max Connect. So Josh Bone and Mike Dosh, thank you very much for your collaboration on this very, very useful product. Okay, we just got another minute or two or three left. Charlie, I know I forgot to ask you, but I'm looking for a word of wisdom here to close the show out with. And I usually get that from you, so maybe you can leave us with some engineering word of wisdom, or maybe the best way that people, engineers, need to find a way to relax, like you do.
Well, I'll tell you, before we do that, let me reach over here, and I happen to have an Angry Audio Bluetooth audio gadget.
Yep.
And the reason... It just literally was sitting here on the chair, came in since I've been here the last time. About a month and a half or 2 months ago, our VoIP phone system for the whole company went out one morning, and we couldn't do any phones on any of the stations in the whole country, literally. And my talk show here in Tallahassee on WFLA, the guy had a friggin' hissy fit because he could not take callers. So I said, well, just use your cell phone and hold it up to the microphone. You know, I don't want to do that. Blah, blah. You know how air people can be. Anyhow, so I said, I asked management, I said, here's a solution. The Angry Audio Bluetooth Gizmo. Or gadget. It's actually gadget, not gizmo. And so I asked management, I said, here's a solution for the next time if it happens again. They gave me the go ahead to buy it. So I bought it and I will install it and it will be available so that if we do lose our system again, our VoIP system again, at least he can take callers on his cell phone. The only problem is everybody in Tallahassee is going to have his cell phone number after that. So that's his problem. But, That's a cool little device. I'm really looking forward to getting it working. It's something else. I'm not hearing you. Whoops.
Oh, sorry. That's because I was so enthralled I forgot to unmute. Great story, and you know, we advertised that Bluetooth audio gadget quite a bit. It's a very useful device. On that phone number thing, you know, you should either get a burner phone. You know, maybe a phone that is supposed to stay in the studio, or you could get you could forward a phone number. I don't know if your VoIP service will let you do that, but yeah, forward a number to that cell phone.
Well, the VoIP was down, but that's going to be his problem. That's not my problem.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, you're talking about the only thing I can say in regard to something to leave with everyone. You know, was the reason for you having me on the show was take some time to do something besides broadcast engineering and clear your mind. You know, even though ham radio is radio, I do not lop it together with broadcasting. Everybody says, well, that's radio. You're doing the same damn thing. I said, no, they're two different things. They're two different animals to me. Broadcast engineering and ham radio are apples and oranges in my mind, even though they may not be in other people's mind. But take some time to relax and do something besides taking your Exolite green screwdriver out and walking around the station adjusting itself.
Hey, Chris Tarr, if you've got a 30-second tip, man, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, keep an eye out on Amazon for these little PCs. They're generally just, you know, they run like Intel Atom processors or whatever, maybe $120. I've been using them for a lot of little prototyping things or little pieces of software that need to run. They're very low power consumption. You know, it used to be, you know, something you'd throw on a server and have this huge server just to be running all the time to run this piece of software. I've been deploying these for like streaming monitors and things. So they're great little tools.
I would agree. And what's that?
What OS are they using?
Windows 11, or you can put Linux on them or whatever you want, but they come with Windows 11.
Okay, cool.
Chris, I agree completely. At our station, the new one in Oxford, where we kind of virtualized everything at the transmitter site, we're using, well, I haven't done the $130 computer. We used the $200 B-Link brand computers because I found I needed to run the Axia IP audio driver in it too. So they have two network interfaces for $210 for these things and Windows 11, and they've been wonderful. We just run a browser and then take WebRTC audio in and out of the browser via the Axia IP audio driver, which doesn't take hardly any CPU to run that either. Just needs a good connection, and bam. So for, you know, $200. We got a couple of there. Right there. I love those things. They really are good to use. Hey guys, we got to go. Charlie, thank you so much for staying in Tallahassee a little extra late. I really appreciate it. I know it's after 6 o'clock there. You're going to drive home in the dark, and I appreciate your effort. Thank you.
I enjoyed it. Good to see both of you.
Good to see you too. Chris Tarr, thank you for joining us too. I really appreciate you, and I hope to see you next week. We'll have some surprise guests next week.
Awesome.
All right. And thanks to Suncast, the producer of the show, always at the ready. Suncast, I appreciate you very much. Thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, home of other fine podcasts. We'll see you next week. Hey, hit that like and subscribe button if you don't mind. You know, make us popular. Remember that we're here typically every Thursday afternoon. And we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.